Welcome to the T2 Hubcast with me, Spencer Locker.
Me, Tracy Roberts.
Me, James Cooper.
And me, Denise Cassidy.
So we've got a full panel today, and it's a really good job. I like a little bit of a laugh before we start.
Yeah.
Because, and on that subject, what we're talking about today, Tracy?
Happiness. We're going to talk about happiness and actually how we measure it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's actually quite coincidental. And the reason for this is, yesterday I was working with a group of people who shall remain nameless, but works for an NHS authority in the south of England.
Giving it away there.
We were talking about what we can do, what ambitions were, what we wanted to do. And the CEO, the really nice guy, talked about a previous NHS authority that he worked with. And we were talking about ambitions. Bearing in mind it's the NHS, but their ambition was to be the happiest NHS authority in the country.
What a KPI that is, isn't it?
Yeah. And I was sat there thinking, well, how are they going to measure that?
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to talk about.
It's such a good subject, though, isn't it? Because I guess when we're talking about our mental health, we usually connect the word happiness in that somewhere, or at least, you know, feeling content maybe is another word, but happiness is another level, isn't it? So I thought that we could maybe look at that in a bit of detail today, because I think probably all of us have got a different idea about what happiness feels to us, but there are some commonalities. And what we're going to look at today initially is there was a piece of research I thought was interesting that we could look at. So I think you were listening to the TED Talk on it this morning, weren't you? So Dr. Robert Waldinger, he's written a book called The Good Life, which if you type The Good Life in, we realise
Brooklyn's not real TV show. which is great.
But what he has been, you know, pretty recently talking more about, although it's been going on over the years, is this piece of research. It's the longest piece of research around the same group of humans. Okay, so I think it's been going on for about 18 years now, something like that. 724 individuals that have been tracking in their life. Okay, and what was interesting, because we were talking about this, that 456 people that were sort of classes in poor communities in Boston, and then there was 268 people that were actually Harvard graduates. So a complete mix of people. And they've started to sort of evolve this a little bit more and be a bit more diverse, haven't they? But initially, you know, it wasn't very diverse at all. But the idea was to follow them through their life and measure these points of happiness and, I guess, success and all those things. And I think they're on like third or fourth generations now, aren't they? And the doctor who obviously is sharing this information, this is like the fourth director of this study or something.
Yeah, fourth.
But it's absolutely fascinating stuff, isn't it? Because his perception of, like, you know, happiness and mine, it really made me think about it. And we ask this question in the room a lot, don't we? Like, what do you need to be happy? Or, and on some of our cards that we use in our breakouts, we say, what does a perfect life look like? And people answer it in so many different ways, don't they? So I thought it'd be interesting to look at that, because this study was showing work, social, home, emotions, all those things. And it really did actually bring out some interesting factors, one of which was one of the things that affects us in terms of mental health, which was connection and loneliness. And what it did outline was that loneliness is more likely to kill people than smoking half a pack of cigarettes a day. And I guess we hear that a lot, don't we?
That's not us encouraging people to smoke half a pack of cigarettes a day, though.
No, not at all. But it really did make me think, because, you know, particularly when we do print workshops and we're looking at people's kind of makeups and what drives them and their sense of purpose, which is super important. It's probably worth us digging into that a little bit today. Connection is key, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think the most recent instant of that hitting us in the face was COVID. Think of all the people that lost their way during COVID, because all of a sudden overnight, they didn't have something or someone else to live for or to get up and strive to do something for.
Well, yeah, we can even consider that in that particular sort of reasonably unique situation where, for a long time, leaders in business were very reticent about home working. We could consider that a bit. We could sort of think, well, was that based in lack of trust? Well, if people are sitting at home covered in Doritos and watching daytime telly, they're not going to be working, are they?
Personal experience.
Yeah, potentially. however, you got to the point where the hand was forced. They didn't have a choice. Yeah. If they wanted to be productive, if they wanted to, their businesses to continue, then they had to work remotely.
Yeah.
And then you can look at the demographic of the working of the workforce, and you've probably got 50% of them going, yes. Because you know what? I gain my energy from isolation. It's not that I don't like people. Secretly, I don't like people. Mm-hmm. But I like to be alone. Working from in isolation suits me really well. I feel sometimes it's a drag going into the office. But don't get me wrong. I know that's how you work. Whereas there's other people who gain energy from other people. Like, they love being in the office. They love being around other people. But now they can't. They've got to go into isolation. So now this is when you're getting some serious mental health issues. So just off the top of my head, now you've mentioned that, we're off the top of my head. I remember, have you ever heard of a bloke called Speedo Mick? So Speedo Mick is a Liverpool guy, a guy from Liverpool, and he does these walks for charity dressed in Speedos.
I've seen him on Instagram.
Right, okay. So he wears little blue Speedos, yes. Budgie Smugglers, yeah? But the thing is, he straps his rucksack on and he just goes.
Yeah.
And he raises a lot of money for charity, raises a lot of awareness and things like that. I suspect, rightly or wrongly, that he enjoys a little bit of attention, yeah? Mm-hmm. Because he does all this stuff in a pair of Speedos, yeah? Yes, okay. But I remember a news article probably during lockdown three. Lockdown three was all right, but it wasn't a proper lockdown, was it? It wasn't like lockdown one. That was a proper lockdown, that was. Nostalgic about it. But the thing was, there was a TV, there was a news article about him suffering from mental health.
Right.
So what he'd done is basically he gained energy from other people, mm-hmm. attention, a feeling of contributing to society, maybe.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things there. All that was taken away from him. Mm-hmm. All that was taken away from him. Sit in your bedroom and get on Instagram or whatever. So when we start talking about happiness, we can talk about introversion and extroversion. We can talk about But the thing is, that level of connection, if you've got the power over that, if you can control that, then you can raise it or lower it according to your needs.
Yeah.
But when that control is taken away, you've got no choice.
I think for most of us, we'll have like somewhere on that spectrum, we'll require, I mean, we were talking about this earlier, weren't we, about like with our jobs, because we're constantly out there and talking and giving. By the time we get to the end of the week, sometimes we've gone from extrovert to introvert.
You just want to get home and just not say a word.
But that's not because we don't like the connection at that point. We just feel our cup is full, and actually then we feel great and we connect in different ways with our family. And I think for some people, back to your point, they're maybe not like huge party animals or that want to talk to hundreds and hundreds of people, but even through a couple of good friends at work or one person that they interact with daily, or, you know, the fact that sometimes social media feels like they're kind of integrating, and there's obviously a downside to that as well. I think connection is really the key thing. And if people lose their way, it's because the connection has dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where this loneliness factor comes in, isn't it? And I think it's quite hard. I mean, the first thing that this study brought out was connection is key. Good relationships is the most important element to success and living a happy life.
Okay. Can I just mention about community and connection within communities? And then see how any of us can maybe make a link to professionalism as well. And then maybe it might link to something in management. Yeah. So communities in small villages that are in the northeast of England, I actually experienced this on Sunday, which was on the way back from one of the old sessions or football matches I was watching. And it was little kids with high vises on, cleaning up litter and helping the community. And it wasn't just them by themselves. They had adults with them, so it was safe and secure. Mm-hmm. But it was, if you are starting to do things like that from such a young age, when you get into your professional lives and as you start to get a little bit older, that becomes part of your routine, your habits. You start to speak to people within those communities.
Yeah.
And then it surely, and you might have some research about this, Tracy, surely that must go into a professional working environment as well, when you're helping other people just to be a little bit happier. We talk about building the reciprocity circle, for example, telling people what they bring. But is it is it just a coincidence, or is there research to support it that when you bring the connection in and you start to make these relationships and form relationships, just doing something for the greater good, for the bigger purpose and the bigger ideas, yeah. is that something that then, actually, I feel pretty good when I do this? I might even yeah. feel happiness. Yeah. Now you said that, that brings me on to the difference between expectations and gratitude. Because the thing is, when I won't say this is researched or anything like that, but in my experience and with a lot of people I've talked to, when they're not having a good time, when they are not happy, it's usually because they hold their expectations above the gratitude. Why aren't I having that? Why aren't I there? Why are they so happy? Why are they getting these opportunities? Why? But I work hard. That's expectations above gratitude. When you get your gratitude above your expectations, you start feeling a little bit happier. So you're like, you know what? I like the way they talk to me. I like the way, when you start talking about gratitude journaling, so it's writing down the things that you're grateful for. Yeah. What I found really helped me was sending unsolicited messages to people I was grateful for in my life.
Yes.
And telling them who from.
You sent me one.
Everybody else, you're thinking, everybody else. Now, what you're doing is you're raising everybody's expectations. Where's yeah. mine? Why haven't I got one yet? But this is the thing, isn't it? When you tell somebody, and we talk about this on days when we said, right, who's got friends? Why are they your friends? Why do you trust them? And just a great attitude, because sometimes we take our friends for granted. Yeah. They're just yeah. part of my life. Yeah. But actually sitting down and thinking, right, so what do they actually bring to my life? What am I grateful for? Why? And then tell them. Yeah. Tell them why that is. And then that comes up to the reciprocity circle. You know what you do really well is this, and I really like that.
Yeah, and I think it's like for any relationship, you should want someone in your life, not need them. Yeah. And I think that's a big difference, isn't it?
So although from all of this research that we've been started talking about, it's quality. So yes, connection's really important, but it's quality of those relationships. Because I now even the last few years, I've had to just drop, sounds really harsh, but drop and lose certain people in my life because I know that wasn't a quality relationship. I was not getting any happiness or joy from that relationship. And sometimes you do have to be honest and just think, this isn't making me happy and I just need to...
Sometimes it's true.
But that's hard to do, especially if they've been your friend or part of your life for a long, long period of time. You feel as though you have to keep hold of them.
And sometimes that can cause resentment and stop us being happy. Yes. But we've got to have that realism where we're looking at somebody, are they here for the long term, are they here for the short term? Because some people will drop into your life, brine it up, make it happy, and then leave.
And that's the thing, sometimes that's right. Yeah, we're leading a session, that's what we do. We bring the sunshine and then we don't follow people, but a little piece of us will, if you've done it right. Yeah. And I think that's important to remember. It's like, that's okay, but yes, long time or good time sometimes, isn't it? Is that the expression?
Yeah. And then sometimes somebody will come in and you think, right, we were talking about Friday night dinner earlier on, the bloke with the dog, what do they call him? Jim. So Jim's turning up all the time and everybody's going, oh, but at one point, Jim probably brought something to that house, that relationship, that family that they liked, but now they just can't get rid of him.
Yeah.
So, sorry, pop culture reference.
Yes. Go back to the quality relationships bit. One of the bits that I thought was really interesting in this study was that if you are satisfied in relationship, in a relationship or good relationships at age 50, this was a big predictor of who would be the healthiest in that group at 80. Right. And also they had the sharpest brains. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. And the other thing that was interesting about that study is 36 people in this study who have passed while going through the study have then allowed their brains to be retained to allow them to be studied. So where we normally have brains that have been damaged or got, you know, some sort of mental illness that's occurred or, you know, degenerative, I don't know what you're saying, or a disease, we've got really healthy brains of happy people that are being studied as a consequence of this 80-year-old study. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
That makes me think, were they happy to have that done?
Yeah, they're picking out the books to me all the time. Like, but for me, then their children are being studied, and then to your point, it's like, so the two things I wrote down was like, in the West, it's now that we're kind of more focused on self, so individualism.
Yeah.
So I think that's what you were getting at. Yeah. I think in the West, we're kind of going to, you know, how can I be better? Why am I not getting the things I want? Like what you were saying, whereas collectivism is more Eastern, and that's kind of like importance of community and working together. And we're still seeing that divide between the West and the East. And what's quite sad about that is that individualism is directly linked with perfectionism. Perfectionism's on the rise. That doesn't make us happy.
No.
There's not many people who are perfectionists are swinging across the chandeliers of the, you know, whatever home they're in, because they're being really hard on themselves. And part of that can cause disconnect, can't it? And measuring ourselves constantly up against people on social media, which, I mean, we would never go to that when we were kids, would we?
You're a piece of pet hair,
we knew the best, you know, the person who's the most popular at school, and we always looked at them and think, well, I wish I was there, or I wish I had her hair, or I wish I dressed like that person. Now you're consistently having this thrown in your face.
Yeah.
So you're so connected, but even less connected.
The thing is, when we start talking about influencers, when I say influencers, I mean influencers stroke manipulators.
Because
it's one way or the other. Yeah. Well, you look at this idealistic thing that and they're telling you, look what I've got. Look what how I look. And I get all this free stuff coming. People are sending me free stuff, and I unbox it and I show it to you, and you go, you know what, this is free. And you're sat there going, why aren't I having that?
That's exactly what it doesn't ask.
Yeah. So we're getting resentfulness. And we're getting people feeling down and things like that. And I want to be like that. Well, actually, you're you and they're them. Let them do their thing and you can do your thing. Don't get me wrong. When we start talking about like fitness influencers and things like that, they can influence you, but you've got to tread your own path. You can't try and be them, because you're never going to be them. Yeah. And then when you fail, that brings you down. It doesn't make you happy.
But I think the question as well is, when you look at all of these influencers who post about being in Dubai on the sunbed, and they've got all of these fancy, amazing things around them, how happy are they?
Yeah.
Bloody blissful, I reckon.
Are they, though? Or,
no, and I think,
or is it just all for show? Because they feel as though they've got this big following that they need to portray that to the world.
Yeah, and you know, that leads on to something that we're going to talk about in the next podcast, which is called the status game. So we'll box that one.
Fair point.
Yeah, well, that's a really fair good point. And a lot of that is, you know, what happens when that's all gone.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things about happiness that, you know, you can say is that we've got this toxic tribalism going on, which is a bit of that. We've got to be part of all these things. Mm-hmm. And we've got to be involved. And it's called toxic for a reason. You know, where we've been drawn into all these things that are just clearly not true, or we think they're going to make us happy. But the reality is, each individual's happiness can only be measured by themselves. You know, what makes you happy will not make the next person happy.
That's just a really good point. How can you measure happiness?
Well, actually, there's a formula. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
You do now.
So, here is the happiness formula. H equals S plus C plus V.
Okay.
Got it?
So, you've written that out for me, because I'm crap at that.
So, H stands for happiness.
Yeah.
S is for set point. C is for life circumstances, and V is for voluntary actions. And if you're interested, you can look that up and do your own maths on that. But for me, I mean, it's great to see there's a formula for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can go figure that out later on, that'd be perfect.
Yeah, how does that work?
I don't see the bit where there's a dog. Because for me, the dog needs to go. I think I'm going to put dog in brackets at the end of that.
Yeah.
But apparently that's the happiness formula.
What's S again?
S is your set point. So where you are at the moment and what will make you happy. So, and that's obviously going to be different for everybody, isn't it?
Right. So S is set point. C is where you are now.
Lifestyle, circumstances. Yeah.
V is
voluntary actions.
Right. So it's really going to be S plus C plus V over dog.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Stroke cat.
But it's still happening, isn't it? And I mean, because we're talking about like how this all links into our purpose. We talk about this every single day, don't we? Our purpose. And I don't think, I actually heard someone yesterday during the session I was running saying they've never considered purpose. And also, we know it drives human behavior. It's not weird that a lot of people don't actually think about that.
Yeah.
Like, and it's true. Like, I put here, living for something other than yourself.
Yeah.
You know, or someone in some cases. Huh. And I think for people who actually moved or something changes, they don't always make that direct link with how that affects their happiness and mental health, but unfortunately make a difference.
But again, on that subject, when we start talking about social media, we've got to understand that we can't confuse purpose with needs.
Yes.
Because the thing is, your needs change, your needs evolve, And again, when we start looking at, if you confuse your purpose with your needs and you identify another party as providing those needs, like we said, influencers, and if you can't achieve those needs, well, you can't achieve, so you don't achieve happiness.
You set yourself up for failure.
So we can't confuse the needs with purpose, because purpose doesn't change. When you establish what your purpose is, it is your purpose. Mm. And it's there, it's like, it's there for forever, like relatives at Christmas. You just can't get rid of it. When you start talking about needs, those needs can change.
Yeah.
So your personal circumstances, your maturity, your health needs, all these things, because we all evolve, don't we? So our needs are going to evolve along with us.
Absolutely.
So when we start understanding this, when you might sort of, we talk about sense of purpose all the time. Mm. So when we start talking about sense of purpose and somebody sat there going, well, I know what my sense of purpose is, to get a Ferrari. No.
Yeah.
No.
But why?
Yeah.
Peeling the onion.
Going it all down. As Michael Bungie Stania says, and what else? Chip it all the way down to that base level where you go, right, there we go.
But that's another thing that's really funny, because that's two connotations we can use there, because awe is something else that is directly linked with happiness levels and being at peace with yourself, like being in awe of things. Mm. We don't get that enough as humans, or take time to sit in that space. I'm sure you kind of have learned that through reflective work that you've done. And it's one of the biggest things that can help your happiness levels.
I think actually taking and having, like we spoke about, gratification.
Yeah.
And gratitude. So we spoke about gratitude, but actually having it where, do you understand, or have you, what makes you feel good? What makes you feel happiness? And then go, what's the reason for, why do I do what I do?
Mm.
Where does that come from?
Yeah.
And then actually going,
there it is.
How about I do a bit more of that?
Yeah.
And then instead of going, oh, well, I only feel happy when this happens. Go on then. Go on then. If I'm going to be you, you do you.
It's also good to remember that it's okay to look at this from a selfish perspective.
Yeah.
So an example I could give is, I was talking to a lady a few days ago about the fact that, in her print profile, she's a 2. So that's needed and appreciated for those of you who kind of connect with the print that we do. And I really got her to understand that she gets a lot of her energy from what she gives to other people. It wasn't so much for herself. It was more about what she can give other people. And she said, oh, is that really bad that I feel good for solving people's problems? And I was like, no, if that's what makes you feel good and you enjoy it, as long as it's not the detriment of your own happiness in some other way, then do it, because it's not selfish, it's human behavior. It's what you need. You need to feel wanted and acquired.
And that's the thing, you've got to be authentic. And that authenticity, we talk about this all practically every day. Mm-hmm. So when we start talking about the brain, chemicals in the brain, and there's loads of chemicals in the brain and the body, as we already know. But the four we tend to talk about are dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and cortisol. So one of the things we talk about is sometimes we will establish cortisol when we're very much focused on something that's really important, whether it's competition or whether it's hunting or obviously not so much now, but when it was based down in the past. But this cortisol will come out. This is important. I need to bring my A game. Mm. But when we achieve what we need to achieve, then the oxytocin, the dopamine, and the serotonin flood through our brain and wash that cortisol away.
Mm.
Yeah. However, we also know that in the real world, sometimes we just can't get past that thing from work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at the end of what we're doing, and it might be the working day, we go home, we've still got that cortisol in there. Yeah. We've not been able to produce the dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin to wash the cortisol away. So if we can't stimulate these chemicals genuinely and authentically, we've got to stimulate them artificially. So this is when, and I will say in the room, we say, right, does anybody exercise? And people put their hands up and go, right, why? And some people say, well, because of this, because of that. But mostly people say, because it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Right, here we go. But the thing is, the follow-on from that is, it's not just exercise. Referencing what James said there, be you. Mm-hmm. So for some people, it's exercise. For some people, it's Netflix and chill. For some people, it's going out and meeting friends for drinks. For some people, it's kicking a ball around or going to play squash. But the thing is, you've got a thing. You've got a thing that makes you feel good, whatever that is. You might be building a boat in a cellar knowing that it's never going to touch water. But the thing is, you've got a thing that's... Yes. So do it. Be authentically that. It might be volunteering to work in a soup kitchen. It might be doing being truly altruistic and helping other people or contributing to the community. But we've all got a thing. Don't feel that, oh, I've got to go to the gym to feel good. No, some people do. Not everybody. You've got to know what your thing is and be authentically you and going, right, I'm recognising I'm struggling with this. This cortisol's there. I can't get past it. I can't relax. I can't switch off. I can't watch TV. I can't sleep, whatever. What am I going to do? What do I do to make me feel good? Right, I'm going to do that.
And be brave with it as well, because one of the other things that I read during the study was that one of the questions that came up was, do humans actually know what makes them happy? And apparently we're pretty rubbish at realising that. Like you said, some people don't realise. They go to the gym and think it's about aesthetics. It's not. It's because actually it makes you feel good. So one example he gave was he put two groups of people on trains from like going through New York. And he said, right, you guys do what you always do that you think makes you happy. They're like, well, reading or listen to podcasts or whatever it is. He said, right, you guys, you've got to strike up a conversation with a random stranger all the way into work. And of course, the thought of that was like complete dread for these people. And then when they did this research enough, they then made a correlation between the people who thought it would be the worst thing in the world actually being the most happiest in the long term. Because they'd realized that after a period of time, they'd gone to their screens thinking, this makes me feel good. This makes me feel like I can shut off from, you know, potentially people that I don't really want to talk to, speaking to me and all those things. But actually what they realized was that connection, going back to this key point, actually is important. Yeah. Some people more important than others. Doesn't mean it's always with someone side to side. Doesn't mean it's always with someone on a call, but connection is obviously super important.
Yeah.
So consider where you can get connection points, no matter how big or small they are. And think about, what can you put into that? And could you be a bit braver and see if there is something else out there that can make a difference to your mental health? Because we don't always know those things.
What's the worst that could happen?
Well, you could end up talking to James.
I'll bend you off.
And he'd tell you a story about quantum physics or something.
Yeah.
And be interested.
As Mr. Chow said, brilliant. So can I just to sort of round that off, so if I take that equation that we've already highlighted, so if I say my set point being here right now, okay, my circumstances or life circumstances are, we're at work, we're doing a podcast. My voluntary actions is I'm going to then take this information. I'm going to try and pass it on to somebody else. Are you going to post a podcast?
You're going to feel good. They're going to feel good.
Correct. So is that part of the equation? I.e., speak to people to get part of that conversation, have the communication with somebody, and just do something that you might never done before, but actually go and do it and see where it goes.
Good.
Stick it in there, stick it in the equation and see what you think.
The story here is, you know, take your head away from what we think the story is. The story that we see is not your reality, and actually removing yourself from some of that story, i.e. social media, you know, the circle of concern in our life will actually allow you to be more free and see the clarity and actually what makes you happy. What makes me happy? Sitting on the couch with my dog, my husband and my daughter. That's as simple as that.
And coffee.
And coffee.
And weight.
Anyone else? You can say
my lovely girlfriend and football.
Okay.
Hey. Walking the dog.
Buddy.
Walking little buddy in the Peak District or the Lake District, out in nature with the dog. Happy. Yeah.
Awesome. And just seeing you like you guys happy makes me happy. Excellent. So that's the end of the Hubcast. Thank you very much indeed. Well, we'll be back soon with another T2 Hubcast. Until then, bye bye now.